In the US, attorneys for the victim in a Wisconsin sex abuse case voluntarily withdrew a lawsuit against the Holy See on Friday, in which Pope Benedict XVI and Cardinals Tarcisio Bertone and Angelo Sudano, the Secretary of State and Secretary of State Emeritus respectively, were named as defendants. The case that triggered a global media firestorm in early 2010 and its removal from the docket is being considered a vindication of the position of the Holy See. The Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, John Allen, spoke with Charles Collins about the situation.
Well, it should be said that the attorneys who originally filed the lawsuit have described the decision to withdraw this case as a purely practical move. One, they say they got most of the documents they wanted from a separate lawsuit against the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, and two, they say they want to concentrate on a similar lawsuit they've got against the Vatican out in Oregon. So they're playing down the significance of it. But that said, I think it is enormously important that this case is no longer on the docket, because this was the case centered on revelations about Father Lawrence Murphy, who allegedly abused almost 200 kids at a school for the deaf in the Milwaukee area from 1950 to 1974. This was the case that triggered the global media firestorm in early 2010 that led to a very incendiary front page piece in the New York Times suggesting that the Vatican and Pope Benedict had failed to respond aggressively to the crisis, and really did, I think, galvanize and shift public perceptions in very important ways. So the fact that this case has now, in a sense, died on the vine, I think does mark the end of what has been an extremely important chapter in this story.
The Holy See's attorney mentioned that there is some confusion going on because of the differences of canon law and civil law. How important is it that there is, I mean, in these cases, how important is this distinction and people's understanding of it?
The distinction between church law and civil law is important, and it is often misunderstood. At the heart of this case in Milwaukee, and it has been at the heart of other complaints against the Vatican, is a document titled Crimen Solicitationis, originally issued in 1922 and then updated in 1962, which outlined church procedures for handling abuses of the confessional, including sexual solicitation. And it's been touted by many people as a smoking gun proving there was a kind of Vatican-orchestrated cover-up of these cases, because it calls for them to be handled confidentially. Now, the misunderstanding there is that this had to do with the church's internal discipline. The document in no way addressed the question of whether these cases should also be reported as crimes under the civil law. It simply had nothing to do with that. So if you don't understand that distinction, it's easy to look at this document and see, aha, you know, it proves that the Vatican was sweeping this stuff under the rug, when in reality it had nothing to do with what has become one of the defining questions about this crisis, which is the question of collaboration with civil authorities.
This decision comes just a few days after the end of a seminar here in Rome covering the issue of sexual abuse, attended by some very high-ranking church authorities, and in fact a note even sent by Pope Benedict to it. Where do we stand now about sexual abuse in the church? How important was this event last week in addressing the crisis?
Well, I think the event, which was a four-day symposium at the Gregorian University titled Towards Healing and Renewal, which was co-sponsored, as you said, by many important offices in the Vatican and attended by senior personnel, I think it was a symbol of the fact that the church is sort of foursquare now committed to an aggressive response to the scourge of child abuse. But you asked, where do we stand? Look, I think the answer to that question is the policy problems have largely been solved. I mean, a few years ago, the questions were things like, are we going to have a zero tolerance policy for abuse? That is, if church personnel are credibly accused of abuse, will they be removed from the field? We were debating questions like, to what extent should we commit ourselves to a policy of full cooperation with civil authorities, that is, reporting all of these crimes to the police and the prosecutors and collaborating with their investigations? I think, for the most part, those questions have been answered, and they've been answered in favor of the reform position. So the policy of the church, both at the universal level, and certainly in the countries most scarred by this crisis, like the United States and Ireland and Germany, we have strong policies now. So the question no longer is, what is the policy going to be? The question is, how universally and thoroughly is it going to be applied? And in those moments when there is a breakdown and a failure, what are the consequences for that? Those are the hard questions that now have to be answered.
As a final question, The role of the media has also been – it was spoken about at the conference. It was spoken about actually by the lawyer in the case of Milwaukee. People sometimes see it as a double-edged sword. Many of these cases would never have come to light. These new policies would not have come into place unless media exposure had happened. Yet some people also accuse the media of exaggerating or misunderstanding what's going on. What do you see the role of the media in all of this right now?
Well, look, speaking as a media professional myself, I will tell you we are definitely a mixed bag. That is, if the question is media coverage of the church, whether it's about the sex abuse crisis or anything else, is it sometimes scandalistic? Is it sometimes exaggerated? Is it sometimes unbalanced in an unfair way? The answer to all that is yes, of course, and we all know it. Now, if the question is, has media coverage of the church, again, not just on the sex abuse crisis, but on other things, has that coverage also sometimes galvanized the church into reforms that it might have taken a lot more time for the church to arrive at were it not for that external pressure, then I think the answer there is also clearly yes. I think one of the striking things about this symposium at the Gregorian is that net-net, if you sort of listen to the tone with regard to the media there, it was fundamentally positive. I mean, we heard American Cardinal William Levada, who is the head of the Vatican's powerful Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which has responsibility under church law for managing the sex abuse crisis. You know, we heard him say that in many countries around the world that we now look at as pace setters for the church's response to the crisis, places like the United States and Ireland and Germany, that had it not been for aggressive media coverage, the church might well not have adopted the strong policies of which it is now justifiably proud. So, look, you know, I don't think this kind of undertone of concern and an occasional annoyance about media bias is ever going to go away. But I do think at senior levels there's also an acknowledgement that on this issue, the sort of kick in the teeth that the church took probably did some good.